To the Leading Deeply podcast. I'm Dr. Joe Albert, coach, consultant, and teacher, interested in storytelling and helping people thrive.
And I'm Dr. Beck Burson, a physician and psychiatrist fascinated by neurons and narratives and how people change. Thanks for joining us at Leading Deeply, a space to get curious how individuals and organizations address the undeniable desire we all have for meaning, purpose, and belonging. We want to know how leaders and those aspiring to lead can engage and animate these human needs to cultivate flourishing.
At Horizon Credit Union, community is who we serve, and helping you grow is our goal. Your path is our purpose, and together we can make a positive impact. Whether you're ready for a checking account, a home loan, or a team that cares about your dreams, doing business here does good in the community. Discover the difference and open your account today or find a branch near you at hzcu.org. Horizon Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity lender insured by NCUA.
We all really need each other, and that brings home the point of what belonging is in the sense of home and connection to one another.
Hello and welcome to Leading Deeply. I'm Joe Albert, and with me is Dr. Beck Burson. Today our topic's about the importance of belonging, work, our relationships, our communities, and in our lives. And we're very excited to have with us today Kim Samuel. Kim is a leading voice in the global movement for belonging. She's the author of On Belonging, Finding Connection in an Age of Isolation, an exploration of the crisis of social isolation and humanity's right to belong. She's the founder of the Samuel Center for Social Connectedness Initiative. And in 2024, she launched the Belonging Forum, a new solutions-focused initiative that completed a groundbreaking study on the state of belonging in the United Kingdom. She's internationally known as a speaker and an author, and we're very excited to have her with us today.
Kim, thank you so much for joining us. I just want to welcome you to our podcast. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Joe and Beth, for the opportunity. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. Thank you very much.
And for our listeners, it's just kind of a fun fact. Kim is in South Africa right now. It means so much that she went to the extra effort to try and connect to us. Kim, I wanted to start things off with a focus on narrative. In your powerful book, you write about this image of being at the bottom of a well. And you talk about how belonging was jeopardized after your father had a brain injury in his 60s. And you share about your conversation with Nelson Mandela. Would you mind getting our listeners up to speed and share your story? Share how those events are related and how that's given you a strong, passionate purpose in your work on furthering belonging.
Well, in 1997, my father, who I was very close to, had a brain injury, and as far as we knew it, out of the blue, there was no warning. The doctors described it as if he had been shot in his head from the inside, and he was in a coma for 3 months, and that was very hard for us, for my family, for all of us. And there were many times that I wished if he was going to stay in a coma and couldn't come back to us. I shouldn't say I wished. I prayed that the angels would come and take him home. But he did wake up, which was wonderful. And when he woke up, he had a lot of disabilities of all different kinds and really needed to adjust. He got to a rehabilitation hospital that was in Chicago, even though we're from Canada. And the better that he started to get in terms of being able, for example, to move his limbs again, which was one of the things that he had lost, I kept seeing this sadness in him, and I didn't really understand it because he was digging in and working away, and we were able to be speaking to one another, and he was back. The image of the bottom of the well that you mentioned really started to come in, I guess to my imagination. I kept seeing this figure, a person could have been my dad, could have been anybody, sitting all alone at the bottom of a well. And I should preface this with, I can't even draw stick people well. But I had this very strong image, and even more so when he went home, and my mom went home, and she was his now noted primary caregiver, but really she had been his wife. They've been married for more than 40 years. So you can imagine there were all kinds of adjustments happening. And that figure alone at the bottom of the well came to represent isolation for me. Mm-hmm. And not loneliness, but isolation, because he didn't have his agency, his choice about things, his voice. He didn't choose to be at the bottom of a well. And that even though family was around and friends were around, there was this way that he was being treated by a lot of people, even well-meaning people, that he was somehow not the same person. And this was really brought into focus when it was time for him to go to rehabilitation, when the insurance company would not give a dollar in your currency or mine for that, saying that he was now in his sundown years. Mm. By the way, he had just turned 65. And I got aware then about what ageism was, this idea of making a judgment about somebody's worth based on their birthday, and about ableism, or the way people treat people with disabilities as being less than. I got to see that what was happening with my dad, and really opening my eyes about what happens with disabilities, is that people can sometimes see that person as being less than something, or less than they were. And it's not, though, about the individual. It's about the way society still treats older age or disabilities or poverty or so on. So I'll give you an example. With poverty, it's not about the poverty. It's the way that society imagines people living with poverty or experiencing homelessness and so on. So I thought, this is a mindset problem as much as anything. And I resolved to do something, anything, about it. And so I just started to educate myself around others that had experienced something related to what my dad had experienced, but in particular looking at disabilities that were psychosocial disabilities or intellectual disabilities and so on, because I just saw so much prejudice and misunderstanding. So my father passed in 2000 at the age of 69, but we had him for four more years after the injury that we don't know what caused it. And I was at that point really starting to try out a few things, a few programs, and but also looking at the ethics of all of this. And I was, around that time, 2 years after my dad died, I was invited to this amazing evening in New York City in honor of Nelson Mandela and Gracia Michel. They were husband and wife to each other and both incredibly strong leaders. And I had met Gracia on other occasions, so she remembered me, and she asked me this simple question: how are you doing since your daddy died? Mm. And to be honest, Becca, I don't really remember what I said, except that I looked to him, to Nelson Mandela, and saying, I said that I'd missed my father and so on, but I looked to him and I said, the biggest thing that I've learned about is isolation. Of course, you would know all about isolation. To which he responded, no, I've never been isolated. And that just kind of set me back. You know, he'd been in prison for 29 years. A lot of those years, as you know, and Joe knows, at Robben Island Prison, and a lot of that time in solitary confinement, devoid of any connection that we could see, and yet he never felt isolated. So I kind of gathered myself back up, and I asked him, not even in Robben Island? And he said, no, because in Robben Island, we were all brothers working together with a common purpose. I was never alone. And that was like this big ray of light that I could see, and something that sounded like a paradox. I was never alone, because we could argue that he was almost always alone. But both his faith, which he spoke about, not in that conversation with me, but his faith and his resolve that we are all connected. And I imagine he meant both his brothers that were in that prison, in particular, the part of the prison for political prisoners, and as well with his countrymen and countrywomen in this struggle to end apartheid. He then went on to say that he had seen isolation, in a child in the village who has HIV/AIDS, who no one will love or care for or feed. And he then gestured with his hand to say, I have seen isolation, and it is very bad. Now, all I can tell you is that in that moment, it wasn't sort of an aha moment that I heard a drum roll or saw stars coming from the sky or anything close to that. I just had within myself this quiet affirmation of, okay, this is what I'll be doing for the rest of my life. And based on that, by the way, based on my really strong conviction that nobody should ever have to feel as though they are sitting alone at the bottom of a well.
Wow, that is such a powerful quilt that you're stitching together. You know, all these different people that you know, all these experiences that you've had, all these images and inspirations. I feel like you're stitching together this really powerful quilt. I want to open it up to Joe here, but I will just say as a reflection, just to kind of set the tone, you were talking about losing your father, and I'm so sorry for that loss. And, you know, the suffering that Nelson Mandela went through with those people that he was imprisoned with, and this very real element of our humanity that touches on suffering, touches on pain and grief. That's one of the things I really appreciate about Joe. And my husband lost his first wife to cancer at age 28. And when Joe and I met, he had lost his wife and experienced a heart attack where he actually had to be brought back to life not too long after. And these experiences that sometimes we want to sanitize or not make a part of our life are so part of our humanity, and that reciprocity that you talk about where we have needs. I just was struck by your story and how that element shines through. I don't know if there's a response to that, but I at least wanted to set the tone and share that.
First, thank you for sharing as well, and for giving me the beautiful image of a quilt stitching together. It's beautiful. In terms of what you're talking about, you know, the law about loss, and those to me are the most profound losses of people that we love. I also lost my mother and my sister in 2008, a couple of months apart, to different forms of cancer. I don't want to say that to make everyone really sad. What I want to say is that, well, it was really sad, but there's something about resilience that comes to meet you and being really connected to others that are around you in that time, and also to the person who is leaving. But I don't think anywhere for me is it written, or is it right to say, oh well, you know, this must be so hard on you, but you'll be fine, and let us know if you need anything. Is that we all really need each other, and that brings home the point of what belonging is in this sense of home and connection to one another. And I look at how blessed I was to have those people, my mom, my dad, my sister, in my life. I wish they could have stayed forever, obviously. But in getting through those times, of course, we have to do it. We don't have a choice. But it sure is a lot easier in whatever struggle we're having to understand about what reciprocity is. And it doesn't mean I do something for you and then you have to do something for me, because that's kind of a transaction, right? But if it's about if someone's there for us and we can tell them that we really need them, we don't have to feel bad or weak about that. That's one time, and then we will probably play that forward when it's our time to be feeling really strong and to help someone else. But if we could get past this transactional way of being, oh, well, what have you done for me lately, that kind of thing, I just find so much hope and beauty even when things look pretty dark. And I think that's at the heart of why I keep shouting from the rooftops or in quiet conversations about belonging.
Yeah, this permeability that we have with each other that isn't tit for tat, but just this interconnectedness is so profound.
Kim, the story about you and your sister, and it was just quite powerful for me, and you can guess why, you know. But I remember after my wife died and I had the heart stuff and all that, my two sons were here, and my neighbors were great about bringing meals and just being present. But then one day, both boys had to go home back to their lives in Los Angeles and Oregon and so forth. And I remember shutting the door as I said goodbye to them, and I thought, oh, this is my life now. It's I'm alone, you know. But I never felt isolated, and I still don't. And I was looking at the four dimensions you sort of address in terms of belonging. And I thought, oh, well, that makes sense. I mean, that helps me a little bit account for why I feel the way I do. I mean, there's nights when I'm alone and I do miss just interacting with people and so forth, processing my day, whatever it might be. But I felt like there were you've identified pretty well, I think, the sort of dimensions of belonging that, for me at least, account for how I feel. I feel pretty vibrant. I feel pretty alive, you know, and I'm still going forward, you know, that kind of thing. So would you mind just talking a little bit about those dimensions?
Yeah. I first want to say we haven't met in person, but I'm so glad that you're doing well, Joe. You've come through a lot. And to say, not only because of this podcast, which wouldn't have happened if you weren't doing well, and what you're saying, means a lot that you're sharing. Anyway, I've identified four aspects of belonging, and it took a little bit of work that they all start with the letter P, by the way. But in the end, I knew that what was behind them were the right words for me. And can come, if people think that could be a good framework for them, then, of course, I'm delighted. The first one is people. And by that, I mean our connection to our communities and to other human beings. And really within ourselves. And I think, you know, well, you touched on it. I think that it's really important to be able to make a distinction between being alone and feeling lonely. For me, that's the difference. That's the difference between isolation and solitude. Solitude we choose. But the people one is the one that I find that most people start and stop with it, our connection to each other. We need that. And I'm not saying that we don't. Of course we do. As humans, we need to connect. And I believe that we have a birthright of belonging. But I want to give the other three as well, and just to ask people to consider them on their own, but also together. So the next one is place. And that's our connection to the places where we live and work and play. And that one's kind of really they're all up to interpretation, but I mean, it's our workspaces, which is a whole other topic, isn't it, about post sort of post-COVID. We still have COVID. But we have some people are working from home, and some people are working from an office, and some people are working hybrid. And it's our sense of place, though, is always very important. For me, sense of place is really connected with my place in nature, and the feeling that I find perhaps the most consoling of all is the feeling of being insignificant, not as a bad thing, as a good thing, as being as part of everything. The next one is power. And I imagine power more around empowerment of ourselves and our own agency and our ability to influence and affect change on the systems that govern us. But I also think about power in the power to do good and the power to reach out to others, and that in terms of structures, the way we usually see power, they're still very hierarchical. And I tend to look at this in circular ways, and that everyone has a role to play, and that our gifts are equal. And I know that may sound overly eloquent to you, but if we consider today, pick up a newspaper, however one gets their news, I see so many abuses of power and not really anything that I would call relational. So I want to highlight that. And the last is purpose. And purpose is our personal sense of why and our connection to something bigger than ourselves. And I want to add on purpose that I don't believe that we're all going to have a different purpose anyway, but I don't believe that we're all going to have a purpose that we say, wow, that one climbed Mount Everest, that one, if only, found a cure for cancer, and so forth. I want to come back to what are people for, and I'm borrowing that phrase and question from Wendell Berry, who writes so beautifully and asks so many important questions, and whom I got to interview for my book. He asked, what are people for? And I think that we don't ask that enough. And what is it that we value? And when we find a sense of purpose in ourselves, I guess I really have. I mean, midlife found my sense of purpose, this path that I knew I'd be on for the rest of my life when I was well into my fifth decade. So whenever it happens, it happens. But I also have a sense of purpose each day, whatever it is. And if I don't get to whatever those goals were, it's okay. I start every day with this sense of gratitude, and I'm here, and let's see what I can do. So that's just a bit of a four-piece framework for you and for Becca that you could think about and people can think about. But I'm also hoping that through this framework, there's a way that we can bring together what I'm calling belonging in action with bringing around some change on systems and structures that are still around and fairly archaic, and by way of an example, institutionalization. Anyway, that's four P's for you.
That's excellent, Kim. Thank you. And I appreciate the depth of it and the breadth of your explanation. That really helps me a lot. And one of the things I struggle with is purpose. I mean, people have said, well, you're alive for a reason. I'm like, all right, what is it? You know, I'm sort of wrestling with that a little bit. But I you know, one of the emphasis of our podcast is leadership. And I know there are times like inclusion's a big thing, but just having people at the table isn't always enough. I mean, how do we create a space, you know, where people don't just feel included, but also seen and heard and stuff? And you know, how would you address that? I mean, from a leadership perspective in terms of organizations.
Yeah. I begin, if I may, just by repeating what you said about people needing to be seen. And I think about this in terms of our responsibilities to each other, not just the rights that we enjoy and often fight for. So I think about, in terms of the leadership part of it, it begins with listening, which you're both very kindly doing for me right now, to really listen to what someone has to say. I think that true leaders build belonging by holding space. If you could see me right now, you wouldn't see me doing much. I'm just holding my left and my right hand more or less at the same level and making kind of as much as I can do as a circle with them. And I see my own purpose very much as holding up this space intentionally for people, individuals and groups to come in and make themselves at home. We can't create belonging for another person. I wish we could. We can't make a friend for another person. But what we can do is to adopt what I think of anyway as a leadership style, is to be able to constantly work at creating those spaces where people can find their belonging. If we're looking, for example, at the workplace, wherever that place is right now, I think about cultivating personal connection through listening, investing in a sense of place, creating opportunities for people to engage in meaningful deliberation and decision-making. And I advocate strongly for cultivating a sense of shared purpose. The thing is, it can't just happen on one level. We have to have a sense of respect for one another. Even if we don't like each other or really want to get to know each other, if we're part of a community, however that is, then if we can come at it that way and with the hermeneutic of generosity, which I think really means that I'll give you the benefit of the doubt and I ask you to do the same, then that would be a lot different than what it is like for people of any age, but I would say especially people that I get to be in learning environments, lecturing and teaching and so on with, is that they're entering the workforce for the first time, and it can be almost baffling, especially if there's some kind of a code. I don't even like the term code of conduct, but whatever it is, this is our culture. If you don't actually have mentors or people to show you around or to give you that sense that you're part of something, and even investing in whatever it is, if you like, you know, cake and meals and things, and or maybe you have a buddy in there, and you get to care in a way about one another's success, but overall, not just in that work, but as a human being. And I think that these four P's also can come into this in the way that cultures in work or in any kind of home setting, which could also be a group home setting, it's still, there's certain values that a family comes to, where you may be so angry at your sibling at some point, or you know, you may think that your dad or that doesn't know anything, or you know, I'm in the grandmother stage, which is wonderful. So I have a little granddaughter, and she just got a baby brother. He was born a few weeks ago. And grandma can't really do anything wrong, but with my adult daughter, it's not quite the same. But we trust each other. We can disagree, but we're always going to come back to the dinner table. And I just don't see that so much. And I'm putting this out into leadership and work and wherever we are, is that, boy, someone lets you down once and you're done, you're out. And I just don't think that that's a very good way to build anything together. So I would advocate for leadership that is doesn't mean that there aren't sort of people at the top, although I don't like that there are, but that if we can come to it, that everyone in this space is really valuable, and we know this because if their role isn't there or they're not there, the system may fall apart. My father used to talk a lot about the importance of who's at the front desk, and he was in business, in a family business, and this is going to sound like the old days when there were actually receptionists. He said that's the most important person, is who answers the phone is going to set the tone for the whole thing. I may be off the topic of the thing, but I think it is. It's not about what's in a manual. That's only going to be as good as people bringing their integrity and their spirit and their dreams to that place and feeling welcomed.
That's really good. Thank you. And this whole topic of belonging has triggered conversations between Beck and I, and even within families. Sometimes people feel like they don't belong there, or they're not part of it. And it's really a rich kind of area of study and all. So that's what I find pretty fascinating, actually. And how, oftentimes people feel isolated, even though they're around people. I just did a workshop on Saturday for a group that really some cool stuff they're doing in Ecuador, providing support services for young girls that have been impregnated through rape or incest and who are socially isolated or marginalized because of their condition sometimes. And I brought this up to them and to the board. It was a board retreat. And I said, what you're really addressing is that sense of isolation that I'm sure a lot of these young women feel, so thank you for pointing that out.
The example that you're giving from Ecuador, which it could be anywhere, is that there may be also the isolation could also have a something even deeper and darker, is the shame and stigma that the young, very young moms may be feeling. And that takes me back to it's not about being pregnant. If they're being made to feel shame or stigmatized, or they did something wrong, or they're feeling very isolated, it's going to compound it even more. And that brings me back to I just wanted to mention about hospitality. That's something I've been studying about, this about how you accept the stranger at the door as you would accept Christ. And in every tradition, faith tradition, there's something about that, about acceptance. But again, it doesn't have to be related to a faith tradition. I think it applies to everybody, that if you're able to accept people as they come, including yourself, then we can make a bigger dent in shame and stigma, and therefore hopefully leave more of a desert than a thriving garden for isolation to take hold and grow.
That's an excellent point. When I spoke at my wife, we had a celebration of life for her a couple of years ago, but I talked about hospitality as a theme in our 43 years of marriage and how we would, I think, invite people into our home frequently, actually, with a sense of being them their true selves and allowing them to ask questions and grow in whatever way felt safe for them. And it stuck with me now, even as I live here, alone, but a lot of guests. And again, that theme of hospitality, where you can be yourself here, it's a safe space, is pretty and most important in my mind, at least when I welcome people. So thanks for punctuating that. That's great.
Well, this is so rich, and I have so many thoughts swirling through my head. But I'm thinking about this telescoping pattern between internal and external, and how that relates to the four P's that you talk about, and how when we start with our purpose, that's a very internal, transcendent experience of trying to figure out what matters. When we connect to place, that might be, with nature, where it's a relationship in our surroundings that centers us. And then even further, people, whether that's in our family, like we just talked about. I mean, I think it's Mother Teresa said, if you want to bring peace to the whole world, go home and love your family. Maybe it's right where we're at in our family or our friendships, our community, and then that going up into culture and power and those processes that can be changed at a bigger level. And you talked about belonging in action, and you were able to connect with and interview Richard Rohr and his Center for Action Contemplation, and just this, I guess paradox is maybe the right word, of both going inward and outward and how those can bring a bridge to each other. You know, just to make it very personal, I literally yesterday was talking to a patient who is, like a lot of my patients, had moved from a small city to Seattle and was like, is the Seattle freeze a real thing? I mean, I'm trying to do all these meetup groups and I'm trying to, you know, be intentional about building community, but I just can't connect with anybody. And it's like, me, thinking of myself as a leader, as a physician, how do I empower him to both take responsibility and ownership of how he wants to approach that without victim blaming, you know, like that you're, you know, you need to do more work, but also looking at the big picture. And if you could just talk about that, that tension between internal and external change. I mean, you're on the external change as an activist, and you know, that speaks to you as far as power, but you know, people can really enter into belonging at any of those on-ramps, whether it is more internal and figuring out your purpose or your relationship to place, connecting with people. But yeah, if you could just talk about that tension between internal and external.
Thank you, Beck. I was just starting to take notes of what you were saying, and then I remembered that I was probably going to get another question here. Thanks for, it was really good what you just said. I want to begin with the word paradox, because I believe that some of these things, including Nelson Mandela saying he'd never been isolated, I've never been isolated. That's such a paradox. And the other side of that paradox is so many people that could be in the middle of a large crowd and even seated at the dinner table, and there's lots of people, but they feel really isolated, surrounded by people. But when I get into them more, and I've been at this a few years now, is that they're not really paradoxes in the end. They go together. To preface this, when I was a child, I still love poetry. I love poetry, and the first poems that I ever spent a good amount of time with were William Blake's Songs of Innocence, Songs of Experience. And I could never really understand how the child in the chimney, as a chimney sweep, kind of suffocating, could be in a world with little lamb who made the infant joy. And then in the end, the end of my childhood, somewhere in there, I thought, well, no, they both go together. There's good and bad are in the same world, and it's how do we navigate. And when it comes to this issue of the individual or the internal and the external, I don't see them as contradictory or as a paradox anymore. And I want to emphasize anymore, because for a long time I've been thinking about, well, even within the individual, you start with, inside ourselves and how we come into this life alone and we leave alone, and yet we're always part of something bigger. And then I go to, I don't know if I should call this conventional wisdom, but I'm going to leave it as conventional wisdom and see what both of you think. The conventional wisdom that you have to be, put in your word, whole. You have to be complete. You have to belong within yourself before you can belong with others. And again, you could insert the word, but we'll stick with belonging. And I'm thinking about, is that really fair or good for the person who feels very, very much alone? They may not have always felt that way. There may have been a catastrophic event in their life that left them feeling like that, or I just I think maybe some of us have more resilience naturally than others, and maybe we should just all loan it around to each other interest-free. But if you don't feel like you're whole, you belong, such as how my mom felt after my dad died. They've been married, oh gosh, it was about 47 years by then. How she supposed to feel that she just belongs? No, it was hard, and that's one part of grieving. And for a while there was nobody that could help her really except her, ultimately. But we were all there for her, and she had some amazing friends that were there for her. It wasn't a formal thing. It was just about being there for each other. And maybe we can all have 1,000 people. But I think that we absolutely do need one. We need at least one in those moments. And so perhaps your patient who is new and is going through this, and how do I get going? I don't think the answer, not to say that you think it is either, is to say the way we do to so many freshmen going off to college and say, this is amazing. You're all grown up now. You're on your own. Your decisions are your decisions, and there's about 200 different clubs you could join. I just found them online on your college website, and why don't you go do that? And maybe for that student, that dorm room door is more like a brick wall. And that we can't simply say to the individual, this is on you. If you don't feel whole in yourself, or you don't feel that you even belong in community, then I think about the reciprocity in this is how can we come and be there for that person just as part of every day. And so if it's the one friend model, I don't think there is such a model, but I use it for myself. Is if I'm new in something, I always try to meet one friend, and it'll be that person, by the way, who will talk to me. Who will talk to me? That I walk over and introduce myself, and I feel some warmth or something. And we may not ultimately be friends, but in that moment, I think we can all be there for each other and to be kind of a guide or interlocutor, just somebody that can bring you into a bigger community. And I know this sounds so simple, and I don't mean it to sound simple because there's so many things that can get away in the way of that. But if we can think about being that, what I'm going to call a starter friend or a basic friend, or just someone who may not know what you're going through, but we all tend to get through adulthood without escaping some challenges. And then I think the individual relates with community. We're always an individual, but we're always part of community, and we should think about not only what do we have to do ourselves, but also to look at situations where the community has failed us. And just to give you a very quick example, this goes back to around when my dad had his brain injury, and I now, since then, have been collecting everything I can find that relate to that topic. And at the time, there was a story about a boy and his parents, and the boy, this is in the U.S., he had very severe disabilities and needed constant round-the-clock care. His parents didn't have any support group, nor did they have any respite. So at one point, they took the day off. And in order to take the day off, they took their son to the hospital and left him there. I'm not saying that was a good thing. I don't think they would either. But here's what happened. When they came back at the end of the day, they were arrested, and their son was put into foster care, and eventually a group of moms came and advocated. But I thought ever since then, you know, who failed whom here? I thought we, you know, the system, society failed the family. And so I do think we all bear a lot of responsibility for holding space for one another's belonging and to not leave anyone to suffer alone.
I just had this image. There's a bridge in Spokane that they've been rebuilding for a couple of years, and you see them working on construction from both sides, and how, you know, two things can be true at once, and doing the internal work and doing the external work, you know, it comes together to form this bridge of belonging. You know, I see that as a psychiatrist, we talk about top down versus bottom up, and we're both, you know, it's our thoughts and coming from the brain and how that affects our actions and our feelings, but it's also, we're very somatic. We have 10 neurons for every one neuron that communicates from our body to our brain versus our brain to our body. And that's because we're also a bottom up creature, you know? And so I feel like nature gives us these examples that it's both and looking at those four P's as a leader, we can figure out where is the entry point that we have the most ability to execute positive change. And wanting to ask you, what would you tell our leaders, you know, or those aspiring to lead as far as belonging? And, you know, if they were to take one thing from this conversation, what would you want them to take home and internalize and try and intentionalize?
Well, actually, my answer will come directly from the image you just gave us about the bridge. So two sides coming together. From one side, I don't know if it's one side of the river to the other. I use that as an example. And you build and build from where you are, but that maybe it's for leaders to actually try to put themselves from the beginning of whatever they're trying to accomplish in the area that's the middle, that's getting woven together, not unlike the quilt that you mentioned, and rather than to stand from what you think you know and what you want to do to, yes, that's really important, but actually bring in a lot more understanding, empathy, listening to the views of others, and build where there is no bridge. That might be my best advice. Yeah, to look to build where the bridge isn't there yet.
A couple interviews ago, we had the privilege talking with Jesuit priest Father Greg Boyle, who runs the largest gang intervention program in the world. And it really struck me how he just said, you know, I didn't plan to get into this. My purpose was just responding to what was right in front of me. And that's what I hear you saying, is kind of looking at where you are in that bridge and responding to what's right in front of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Well, Kim, there's so much richness in your book and also resources. There's just a lot of examples of people addressing this issue of belonging in so many ways. The Samuel Center for Social Connectedness, and just some cool stuff. What can you leave us with about resources, or if people want to pursue this in a greater...
Sure.
What would you recommend?
First, we would love to hear from anyone who's interested in sharing or learning more and wanting to build belonging or share what they're doing. I think a lot of people are already doing this work. In fact, I know it. It's really important, though, that they know that they're doing this work as well and that it's lifted up and valued. We do a lot of programming and advocacy and storytelling, and it's all at its heart to build a global movement around belonging that everybody literally belongs to and is part of. We most recently started something called the Belonging Forum, part of the Samuel Center for Social Connectedness, which was responsible for creating a belonging barometer directly going to 10,000 people and asking them about their own experience with belonging and isolation, and the next thing that we'll be doing with those insights, but also from many other avenues, is to create a charter for belonging and practices that we can all bring into their lives, into our lives. Love to hear from people. Okay, so the all one word, thebelongingforum.com, which will have a lot there, and also connect with the Social Connectedness Center as well. we're all in this together. I believe we all have an inherent right to belong by simple virtue of the fact that we were born. And so whether we engage it as individuals, as community, looking at our responsibilities and also our rights, there's lots to do. And I also want to add, as the last word, this is joyful work. The very nature of reaching out to try to move loneliness out of the picture and social isolation and build belonging and connection just by being part of it. The hours are long, even in South Africa, but there's joy in this. And I think we all need a lot more joy.
Well, thank you. And you brought that. I mean, I'm just kind of overwhelmed, I guess, with the depth and breadth of this conversation. And Beck and I just really, really appreciate your willingness to do this with us. And hopefully listeners are engaged and hooked into this notion of belonging. Grab the book, Kim Samuel, and On Belonging, and pursue some of those resources that are available at the website she mentioned. So, Kim, on behalf of Beck and I, just deep appreciation and thank you for joining us. Be safe and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. I hope we shall speak and meet again in the future. Thank you.
It was so fantastic to have this rich conversation with Kim Samuel as we unpack themes of belonging and how you can respond to where you're at. And we look forward to having more conversations as we continue to unpack themes of meaning, purpose, and belonging. Join us next time as we talk more about purpose and what goes into that. And if today was interesting and you want to continue listening, we would love that. If you want more information, go to leading-deeply.com. We hope you're all well, and we look forward to seeing you next time.